Connecticut wins the national title. But who cares about that? We're here to talk about the Braves. Let's get to some Braves talk. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to Braves Talk. It has been 2 weeks. This is the Iceman, Matt Frates, across from me, the coach and the OG, the pals, and we are going to introduce our guest in a minute. Coach OG, what's up, fellas?
Iceman, OG, we got our guest here tonight, Braves Nation. How's it going? Tonight is the night for you degenerates that are into the recruiting and everything that goes along with that when it comes to the Braves. So we're going to dive deep into the roster, and obviously now at this point in time, Darius is committed to coming back. That happened just after the last time we did an episode, of course, but we're happy to have him back, and obviously some other pieces have been added since then, and we'll get into that. But yeah, man, it's officially now off season in college basketball. The transfer portal is in full swing, and really excited to see where things end up for the Braves. How about you, Dad?
Yeah. Definitely excited about the transfer season. Oh, y'all laughing at me.
Rick, it's been 2 weeks. I haven't seen you in two weeks. And your first inning is, yeah, long pause. Really exciting stuff. Anyway, go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, no, but I mean, been looking at all the possibilities in the portal and waiting to see what the next dime to drop is going to be. So pretty excited, and I'm glad we got our guest, Kevin Mungie, on with us tonight. He's a little bit more knowledgeable in recruiting than I even am, which isn't much from me, but, you know, glad to see he's here and give his input.
Yeah, don't sell yourself short, Rick, by the way, because you are quite knowledgeable. But that is right. We have a guest with us tonight, Kevin. It is great to have you here. I assume this is a sports radio first time, long time thing.
Yes, it is. Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for having me. I can at least, if nothing else, assure you I know a bit about recruiting, but I'm not hiding under the bleachers or behind in the bushes of the Renaissance just to figure out what's going on.
So you are not that burner account that's on there breaking all the news that everybody is mysteriously wondering who it is?
No, I can assure you I'm not that guy.
I still think it's a burner account. I don't care what anybody says. I still think it is a burner account. Well, fellas, the recruiting trail is hot right now, and I think that the Braves have done quite a bit so far. The biggest news since we last met was Zeke obviously committing, or recommitting, I should say. And I believe we had a commitment from Connor Dillon. So, Kevin, why don't you go into just a little bit? I mean, obviously, Zeke, we know he's a known commodity, but with Connor Dillon, because I know that you are very heavy into all of this stuff, and kind of give us your breakdown of what you think that commitment means to the team next year and possibly even going forward.
Yeah, sure. The interesting fun thing is one Connor replacing another Connor so that we always have at least one Connor on the roster. I know other people have mentioned that. I know that just from the simple standpoint of scoring, Connor Dillon has scored almost 1,200 points in the last two seasons at Winona State, which is actually a pretty decent high-end D2 school, which so nothing to, you know, frown about with that. He has shot a lot from three, shot it at 39% last year, which is a pretty good clip. I believe he made 165 twos as well, so he's not just a one-dimensional player. He's a three-level scorer. He shoots a lot of free throws as well, so he can get to the line at a good clip. And, you know, it's just one of those things where if you look just on the face of things, people say, oh, well, it's just a D2 player. But he's a D2 player that was scoring at a very high level in the aspect of he had 18 games or more that he had 20 or more points. He had six games of 30 or more points. And then he had two games where he scored 40 or more points in the game. And from my standpoint, it really doesn't matter what level you're at. If you can score 40 points in a game, that's pretty substantial.
And people who discount that kind of forget that there are a lot of guys who elevate. It's not as if once you're at one level, you're always going to stay there. I mean, didn't Michael Jordan famously get cut from his high school basketball team? One of the greatest we've ever seen. So it's not as if guys can move up. Brad, how do you feel about this?
I think they're good additions. You know, with Zeke, obviously, we talked about that last time, how I think critical it is to be within the unpredictable world of the transfer portal to be able to add a guy that you know fits in your system and fits with your culture, especially after kind of what transpired last year with the guys that we had come in. So having that stability, I think, is really helpful. And obviously, he's a great player that I think is going to, you know, help us out tremendously. And I mean, he was a big piece of the championship team 2 years ago. So looking forward to seeing him back in red, the red and white, I should say. Yeah, I mean, Kevin broke it down really well when it came to Connor Dillon. Obviously, of course, we're continuing with Connor on the roster, and it's the type of player that everybody wants to have come in. Like you said, a three-level score. And I think that, you know, the D2 thing, you know, isn't something to worry about, because I think basketball is one of those things that, like, you can either play or you can't, right? And, of course, you know, there's some physicality things that may come into play, and I think that applies more to guys that play closer to the basket more so than the guys that play the guard position. But, I mean, the D2 path also seemed to work out okay for Indiana State with some of the guys they brought in and stuff that Shirts brought with them. So I'm not too concerned about that. Really looking forward to it, and I'm sure that Dad's got some finer points he would like to add to the conversation.
Yeah, Connor Dillon, he's got numbers that are very, you know, even with Connor Hickman, assists, steals, blocks, fairly even. It's just a matter of the D1 to D2. I think once you get that level, and you're at an upper level in the D2, it's not a whole lot of difference. I mean, it really isn't. And, you know, it's just a matter of coming in. Hey, Luke and Lundy, he came from a JUCO?
I think
so. Or something like that. Now, granted, you know, his senior year, he only averaged, what, like 4 points a game. But he was the star of the championship game in, was it 18-19? The tournament championship
right,
game.
Yeah,
and he's been a star ever since. But, I mean, his numbers are, you know, hey, it takes one game to make you a star at Bradley. So let's not talk on anybody.
Hey, Rick, so last time we were here, you said, and I listened to it just today, that if Brian Wardle hits 2 home runs in the transfer portal, you'll consider this a massive success in terms of recruiting.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you feel about that right now?
Right now, I'm pretty good. But he's had success, so, I mean, until he proves us wrong, the only bump in the road right now is Meta.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of success, or Wardle, I should say, has had a lot of success internationally. Obviously, the verdict's still out on Meta. I'm willing to at least admit that much. And then, you know, we have, you know, Jaquan Johnson's the freshman coming in from Milwaukee. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how he fits into the equation, because I don't know with kind of the – we went from having, like, no guard depth to looking pretty solid at the guard position right now. So, you know, the good part is he's probably not going to be, like, forced into action prematurely, which is a good thing. You know, hopefully he can kind of, we can bring him along and let him kind of find his way into the system a little bit. And then, you know, Joe right here in the comments, he's right. You know, so Corey Thomas was just a commit that happened here in the last week, which I'll let Kevin and Dad break that one down in more detail. And of course we've got the commitment from the Italian Timothy Vanderkamp. And then, you know, we still have, I think, 1 to 2 scholarships on the table. There's some questions if, you know, Cade Harkey is going to retain his scholarship or not. We're not sure how that's all going to shake out. For sure, we know there's one, and it'll be interesting to see what direction the Braves go with that.
Yeah, Kevin, why don't you go ahead and break that down? The three guys we hadn't talked about yet, but also kind of looking to the players that Bradley has sort of been on, whether they've made an offer or not, and just sort of kind of ply your craft, my man, because I saw the notes. You are prepared.
Yeah, absolutely. So just a fun fact off of what Rick had mentioned, Corey Thomas, his coach, actually coached Luke Montlundy in JUCO. So there's a definite connection there with Brian Wardle. Corey Thomas, the guy we just got, he was all-conference JUCO, averaged 12 and 10 his second year there, which his rebounding again, going back to if you can do it at one level, you can do it at just about any level. They are a high-level JUCO team that were in their national championship run. They were in the final 16, I believe, in the JUCO tournament, and actually got knocked off by the who ended up being the runner-up for the JUCO national championship. So he's a really good rebounder, just an elite elite offensive rebounder. I believe he was top 10 in the country in offensive rebounding. He was 17th nationally overall in rebounding. And he's also an elite shot blocker as well, which was 30th in the country in JUCO in that. And he is also much like Darius Hanna in the mold of a big, long, athletic player. He's 6'10". He's about 215, 220 now. So he's put on a little bit of weight in the last year at JUCO. I expect them to get him in the weight room a little and build a little bit more strength. But the good thing is Bradley will be able to utilize him as they've utilized Hanna, where they can switch off on all defenders, defending screens, rolls to the basket, and he will protect the paint very well with the shot blocking capability.
I think I saw the highlights. He can shoot the three a little bit too, can he?
Yeah. A little bit better than Hanna. I don't expect him to shoot a ton of threes, but yeah, he can do a good job with the pick and pop as well. He can do a pick and pop. He can do a pick and roll. He gets down the floor very, very well. So expect to see some highlight reels from him as well, much like Hanna.
What sort of knowledge do you have based off things you've heard or read about Vander Knapp out of Italy?
Honestly, I just from seeing the highlights, I mean, it's tough because, you know, anybody can put together a pretty good highlight reel. I expect him to be very raw coming in. Think Atlason with a little less skill, just for the simple fact that he hasn't yet been acclimated to the, you know, United States ball. Like Atlason got the time in Kansas to acclimate a little bit better to the speed and to the skill of United States basketball. He's a little bit more polished, I would say, as a passer. But other than that, it's one of those things where I feel like they need to get him in here. And they're obviously, much like with every Wardle recruit, they're going to need to work on his defense and going to need to work on getting him acclimated to the speed of the game. As of now, looking at all the recruits that we have coming in and all the returning players, I would say I would probably project him to be a little less far along than some of the other guys. And there's a great possibility that I would say he's going to be fighting for minutes at the outset.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. Because there's nothing. I mean, there's very little stats on him, on Vander Knapp, and very, very little video. And the ones you get's not very impressive.
And I mean, that's not to say he won't turn out to be a good player, because if you look up and down our roster now, we're starting to build a team that if he being Wardle wanted to, he could go a little deeper into using the bench. But as we know from, you know, history, he generally focuses in on 8 to 9 players. And if you're not into that eight to nine player rotation, it takes a little bit for you to crack into that, or it takes somebody doing something wrong that is in that rotation to be pushed out of it. And I mean, I kind of feel the same way about Johnson from Milwaukee as well. He should turn out to be a pretty good player, but he's coming from a place where they didn't play a whole lot of defense. So he's going to have to get really up to speed with that to even crack the rotation.
Yeah, with Johnson, you know, a lot about his game, and the unfortunate thing, a lot of the video I've seen of him, of the good stuff, has been shot from underneath one of the baskets and not from the side. So you get to see him, you know, floor level going up and down. And with him, I see he's a little similar to Birch, not afraid to drive to contact. I think he's a little careless with the ball at times, and that's gonna hurt me. You know, I think I mentioned to Brad a week or so ago, he does a lot of stuff, did a lot of stuff at the high school level he won't be able to do at D1 at Bradley, you know, because, I mean, bigger, faster, stronger players will stop him, you know, pick the ball from him and that. But he's going to be a very good player, good shooter, good assist maker, playmaker, you know, for the team. So he's going to be exciting. Dude averages 30 some points a game, so right around 32, I think. So, and he's played against some pretty decent talent, but it's like Kevin, you said, you know, the defensive side might slow him down some.
Now, based off of this question that's on here, thinking about sort of how recruiting has changed over the past few years and just coming from your perspective where, you know, we've talked on the show before about having to recruit both the players that are on your team, players that are transferring, and then you're talking about bringing in guys from the high school level as well, or even the junior college level. And from the obviously the work you've put into to following this for the last few years, or even longer, I assume, what are some changes that you've seen in the approach? Because we talk about scholarships and wanting to leave some for high school kids. Obviously, you've got to manage all these different aspects of it. And have you sort of seen a change in the recruiting fundamentally over the time that Brian Wardle has been here?
You know, I'm not really certain I've seen much of a change with Wardle and how he recruits per se. Honestly, it's more of a global thing than anything. It's the Wild West out there now. And I feel as though at this point, when you're recruiting a kid, it's almost you're recruiting everybody year to year. You can't really necessarily look at, oh, well, we're recruiting this high school kid and we're going to have him for 4 years, or we're recruiting this junior college player. That's, I mean, really, guys like Leon's and Hannah are more anomalies than anything now, just with the simple fact of looking at just the landscape of basketball. I mean, just for example, there's a kid from Arizona, that big time player, and didn't have to leave Arizona, had a really good situation there, went into the transfer portal and got a, what's reporting right now is $1.2 million to go to Indiana, an NIL deal. So, I mean, it's crazy now, because you look across the Missouri Valley and all the guys that are just leaving the Missouri Valley, and some of them are, I mean, getting really good deals. I mean, just for example, it was reported last night that Jason Kent committed to Texas and got $600,000 to do so. So
we're in the wrong business, fellas.
Yeah, you're right about that. So yeah. Not to stray too far away from Bradley recruiting directly, because I do think this impacts the Braves, but do you feel like the days of developing players, like having that developmental big that sits on your bench that you bring along, that you hope he's a, you know, a meaningful contributor by his junior, senior year, I feel like those days are gone. Because if you do put that work into developing that kid and he comes out and he excels, he's gone. You know, unless he does have some sort of, you know, really strong loyalty to the coaching staff and the school. But we've seen that loyalty is few and far between in the world of NIL right now. And so it does seem like you are literally recruiting your team just for 1 year, 1 year at a time. And I'm sure that, you know, you hope as a coach that you can create that relationship and make it strong enough that these guys do want to stick around. I know Wardle's big thing is give me 2 years, you know, and because I think probably we've talked a lot about how Wardle, I do think he, and I mean this in the most positive way possible, he could be a bit of an acquired taste. And so I think that it maybe does take a year or so for somebody to kind of understand the system and where they fit within his style and the culture that's been created, Bradley. So do you think that the days of developing guys and bringing them along to be a productive upperclassmen have passed us by?
Yeah, you know, I feel like we're there right now. Now, obviously, in the next several years, the system could correct itself and go back in the other direction. But again, first and foremost, shout out to Duke Dean, Darius Hanna, Malavi Leons for, you know, sticking around and, you know, appreciating the brand and the loyalty to Bradley basketball. But, you know, on the other side, you're looking at situations where it's tough. It's tough for a kid like Jacoby Gillespie to, you know, sit at Belmont and think about the possibilities that he might have. So he goes into the transfer portal and he ends up at Maryland for, you know, close to $500,000.
And I think, too, like a shout out goes to the Home of the Brave NIL Collective, right? Those guys. Absolutely. And the work they're putting in to, I'm sure, network with local businesses and obviously just donors in general that help bring help keep the Darius Hannas and the Duke Deans and the Malvi Leons and bring the Zeke Montgomerys back and things like that. So credit to those guys and all the work they put in as well.
It's amazing how much work goes into that. I mean, it's almost become like a full-time job now. Whereas if you just think about however long ago, that wasn't on the radar as publicly anyway. I'm not saying that teams were paying players or anything like that, but now it is a fundamental part of recruiting, and not just getting new players to come here, but keeping players here, as our commenter Joe talked about. And it has fundamentally changed, and it fascinates the heck out of me, I can tell you that right now. But Kevin, let's move on to some players that maybe we either haven't been confirmed or we haven't talked about yet, because I know there's a plethora of players that either Bradley has been on, whether an offer has been made or not. And I know that there's probably sort of a pecking order, at least in your mind, as to which ones you think should be a priority for them. So why don't you break some of those down for us?
Yeah, sure. Start with there's a 6'7 kid out of Fishers, Indiana. His name's Keenan Garner. We actually offered him not that long ago. I know Wright State came in with their new coach after Scott Nagy left to go to SIU. They have a new coach there, and he offered him just a few days ago. But he is he's a good scorer. He's a great rebounder at one of the higher levels in the state of Indiana, and was a very good floor leader. He could play multiple positions. I know he was what they would consider a point forward there. He went for 19-10 in the state championship victory a couple weeks ago. And I would say probably a pretty good comp for him back when he was in high school would be a Darius Hanna type. With a little better proficiency to shoot the three. Again, he for whatever reason hasn't blown up in the state of Indiana, but he does have a few offers out there that are Bradley or similar to Bradley types. The next guy I would mention would be Brody Robinson. I'm not sure if we are still in on him because he's a 5'10" point guard. I know we were very heavily in on him, and then Duke Dean decided to come back to Bradley, so I'm not sure where the fit is there, especially from the standpoint that we might be pretty set on guards who are more veteran-like. I think right now it seems that if we're looking for players to fill out the back end of the roster, we're looking more towards freshmen, maybe somebody that's going to come in and may not play a lot the first year, but is going to supplement things just for the simple fact of now with Zeke coming back, Connor Dillon coming in, Corey Thomas committing. We now have 6 seniors, 5 or 6, depending on who you ask, how many scholarships we actually have, 5 or 6 seniors. And then 2 juniors on the docket as well. So it's looking like not so much for a class balance deal, just because, you know, you're not sure whether you're going to keep a guy around for more than 1 year, but just for the simple fact of getting somebody to acclimate into the system. But Brody Robinson was one that he was a named first team JUCO All-American. He led the entire nation in assists. He would probably be I know other people have mentioned it, he'd be a good Bowen Bourne comp as far as his size and his ability, limitless range from three, and he forces the action much like Bowen Bourne. I know the interesting thing is at 5'10", 160, you wouldn't think so, but I think he shot over 200 free throws just this last year alone in junior college, so that's a monster number. And again, not sure if Bradley is still in on him, but, you know, that it is still out. The offer is still out there, supposedly, but I kind of feel like that one might have been pulled once Duke came back. Jackson Moni was another one, Division II player, first team All-District, 21-8 last year. The thing I liked about him was he, again, 6'10", 3-level scorer. He was a 47% shooter from 2, 33% from 3, but an 89% free throw shooter on quite a number of attempts. So that's always a good sign when a guy can step up to the free throw line and knock him down, because we've tended to have that problem over the years in knocking down free throws. Shot a lot of threes for a guy his size. Rebounds the ball okay, I guess, for his size, but from what I've seen, he was not much of a defender, so I'm not sure exactly how that fits into what Brian Wardle likes to do. And he's even for his size, he's much closer to a guy that would play the three or the four than a guy that's going to play the five like Corey Thomas is going to. And then the last couple on my list are a couple high school kids, one from the state of Illinois and one from the state of Wisconsin. Stefan Cicic is from Riverside High School. He's 6'11", 7 foot tall, average 19 and 10 as a senior on a pretty good Riverside team that won 26 games. I would consider him more of a skilled point center type big, more like a Avila from Indiana State light. Does not shoot the three like Avila, but was really good at passing out of the post. In his case, Miami is now coming into play, so I'm not sure we have much of a shot at him. And with adding in Corey Thomas, it would be something where he would be coming in and he would be either second or third in the pecking order at the five as well there. And then probably the guy that I would be most excited about, he would be my number one on that list, would be Amari McCautry, who's a 6'6 wing from Wisconsin. He is now the top uncommitted senior in the state of Wisconsin. The only concern there is, again, he's starting to get some really significant P5 interest. He's supposed to go into a visit at St. Louis. Xavier's come calling a little bit too, so it would be really doing a really good job trying to sway him to come to Bradley and say, hey, you know, you could get some playing time here your first year, but your second year, you could be a star here.
Hey, Rick, so you have opinions, and if you are on the recruiting trail right now, what are some things that you would want to focus on in terms of kind of filling this team out based off of what we know now?
Well, finding two, not one, two available scholarships would be on my, as a coach, my list and my agenda. But as far as players, I like the Cicic, or Cicic, however you pronounce it. I like the McCautry. Either one of those guys, the Keenan Garner, any of these guys we get, Marcus Johnson. I don't know if we got anything with him, but he's only 6'7", but 250. It's either him or Malone. I don't remember which. I think they were both played similar. I watched video on both of them, but it reminded me of a combination of Dwayne Funchess and Jayshon Henry. The way they played down in the post, being smaller but very explosive, and with that weight, yeah, we need bodies like that to, you know, help push around opponents when we need to. So that's what I'm looking for.
All right, so I want to reward one of our commenters. He has been waiting quite a while. He asked this question, and it's something that we had in the agenda, and I waited to put it up here. So thank you for your patience and thinking that maybe we ignored your comment, but we did not. And we're going to project what the possible starting five would be. And Kevin, I want to start with your thoughts, and then we'll go to Brad. And then last, of course, the prognosticator, the OG.
Sure. You know, it's odd because I think I've been asked this a few times already, and I've been pretty set on my answer every time. Duke Dean, Connor Dillon, Zeke Montgomery, Darius Hanna, Corey Thomas. No wavering whatsoever right now, at least not until we get one more scholarship player in here.
I assume the pals agree. They are nodding their heads.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can go wrong with that starting lineup. I think you'd feel good about that if that's the way that we open the season. I do think that I would be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if we see some different combinations early on, just because I do feel like this team allows, with the makeup of the roster as it exists currently, it does allow for a lot of like mixing and matching and different combinations that could be played together. I mean, obviously that's something we'll see throughout the course of a game more so than a starting lineup. I do think that one thing that Brian Wardle's always kind of been bullish on is that he seems like his starting five, like once it kind of gets established, is set for the most part. And that's fine. That doesn't bother me. You know, it'll be interesting to see, like you mentioned, Kevin, who fills out that last remaining or last two remaining scholarships that, seems to, you know, whatever happens there. But you know, I not to just repeat myself, but I feel really good about that starting five, and I'm very curious if you know, Dad, if you've got Meta in your starting five or what direction you're going to go with that.
No, I don't have. I mean, right today, no, I do not have Mehta in my starting five. He'd probably be one of the later ones that come off. It kind of depends on if he could grow a lot, but there's a lot of things in his game I'd like to see out of him. And until that happens, so I know I had discussions on Tap and Talk today with some people. I think maybe they may have misunderstood. And I'm sure I kind of misrepresented how I
felt. No way. Things,
but,
not you.
Stop.
But he can't. He's not. But someone put it down. He's not a real college basketball player. I take offense to describing players who put their heart into practices every day. When you know, you want to come out and say that's our, you know, eat whatever. But anyway, you get into the starting five. The other one, the only other one, you know, is the possibility of Allison. But with Corey Thomas, it's going to be one or the other. And I do lean towards Thomas. I really do. There's so many different things. You know, someone had made a comment back at me, you know, that he sort of thought Davis would take the spot of Leon's. And, you know, I kind of said, depends. Do you want to go big or you want to go small? You know, do you want to run? If you want to run, you're playing Thomas over even Allison. You know, because who did I tell you my lineup was? If you want to, a team that's getting up and down the field, that's going to be Duke Dean, Birch, Hannah, and Thomas. That's going to be your fastest five guys up and down the field, the field court. I got football.
It's a basketball game, though. Yeah. Not a track meet. You got to remember that.
Yeah. But, you know, no, I'm just saying, you know, and that's a team with some size, too, you know, with the exception of Duke. But, That's just my take. But there's so many different combinations you can play throughout the course of a game, depending on your opponent, where they're at in the game. You know, it's Wardle's got to be excited to have these tools.
Yeah,
you know, and he can go out and get another, you know, another tool. You know, I use that in a positive sense, not the negative sense. And
yeah, and that's where I like, you know, bringing Zeke back. Zeke's 6'6". You bring in Corey Thomas, who's 6'10" and very athletic. Again, talking about defense and the way Wardle likes to run things, it allows them the ability to, you know, do the switch all on all screens and just run everything to where, you know, we're blocking shots, we're steal, hopefully getting a little more steals. Birch is progressing to where he's gotten better. You mentioned Christian Davis. Christian Davis over the years certainly progressed on defense to a point where he was getting some games 2-3 steals a game. So, I mean, it's something that you could, you know, you can do tinkering and you can do things based on what the matchup is on across the way on the other side. Allison, the one thing I will say about him, I would kind of stray away from hopefully playing him at the five, just simply because I don't think he's a five. I mean, he's another guy who he's closer to a three than he is to a five. The problem you run into is he could play the three on offense, but he can't most likely guard the three on defense. So that's where you run into an issue with him. And, yeah, you know, he could get better over time. I mean, we saw, you know, just to throw somebody out there, Ville Tavanainen, he was he could shoot the ball. But for the first 2 years he was at Bradley, he couldn't guard anybody. So, and I mean, that got better over time. Nate Cannell had trouble guarding guys when he first started at Bradley. So, I mean, there's always room for improvement there.
You're going to say something, Brad?
Oh, I was just going to say that's one. You and my dad, I think, agree on that about Alomar. And I'm not saying I disagree, but I've told him that I think that Brian Wardle is trying to mold Alomar into Rink Mast. Like, that's what I think that he's attempting to do. And, you know, we didn't see Rink as a true freshman because he got injured, but he, you know, from seeing him in street clothes, you know, he was pretty scrawny at that point in time. And, you know, he benefited tremendously from having that, you know, whole season and off season in the weight room and everything else. And really, so I'll be curious to see what Alomar physically looks like when we get to next season. I'm not saying I think that's what he should be Rink Mast. I'm not saying that I subscribe to that idea, but I think that it wouldn't surprise me if that's sort of the hole they've tried to plug him into.
Yeah, I agree. And I believe that is the thought process. I just, you know, for me, it's not even so much of his, you know, body type or size or anything. With him and the struggles he has seem to be more, you know, IQ based and being in the right place at the right time and knowing what to do. And some of it's also, you know, the mentality of physicality. And I'm just not sure he's where Rink was, you know, when he was just starting either. So, I mean, you know, again, it's something where I hope he proves me wrong. And it's a situation of, you know, you got to figure out where he fits in if he's going to play minutes.
And what I'm taking away from this whole thing is there's a lot of versatility. There is a lot of options. And I think heading into this season, this upcoming season, there is a lot of optimism in the fact that we can beat you in a lot of different ways. And I think that the recruiting trail has proven that. And we are bumping up to the end of the show here, folks. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. But most importantly, Kevin, I want to thank you for taking out the time to join us. It's been a lot of fun, and we hope you had fun too.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you for having me.
Absolutely. Coach OG, it has been wonderful as always, and I don't know when we'll be back, but I'm sure there will be some news to be had on the Bradley recruiting trail. And before you know it, guys, it is going to be the start of the season. So I hope this finds everybody well and safe. I want to thank everybody from Bradley Nation who joined us in. And if you have not listened to us before, you can check us out here on YouTube, hit subscribe, and you can find us in audio. But I want to thank everybody from me, the Coach OG, and Kevin. This is Braves Talk. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on INC Sports are those of Matt Freights, Brad Powell, and their guests, and not necessarily those of the Matty Ice Media Network. INC Sports is exclusively owned by Matt Freights and Brad Powell and is brought to you by the Matty Ice Media Network.